Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here is your host of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right. Welcome, everybody, back to The Millennial Dentist. We are live from Scottsdale, Arizona. We got a special guest that I'm excited about interviewing here, Dr. Ernie Johnson.
Thank you.
How's it going?
I'm doing well, Sully. How are you?
I can't complain.
It was a great day here at the Scottsdale Center, wasn't it?
A great day. I just did level 4, anteriors, multiple restorations, and you've been mentoring a little bit.
I've been mentoring the last 2 days at level 2, and today I started off with the CEREC Accept event for new prospective CEREC owners.
Prospective CEREC owners.
Yeah.
Anywho, well, so tonight really we're not going to
talking about your history. We're going to talk about something else.
And we're not, I know, as opposed to my podcast, we're not talking about me. And hopefully I'm not going to talk a lot tonight either. But we're not really going to talk about dentistry. We're talking about some other stuff.
Because dentistry is really cool. And that's what brings all of us dentists together. But we all have other things, we not, that we do outside of dentistry.
Exactly right.
And that's probably what it comes down to, why we're going to sit down.
Things we're passionate about other than dentistry and stuff. Yeah.
But we're pretty passionate about dentistry.
Yeah,
so we could go all night about that. Maybe we'll take a bend.
Okay. So to start off, Ernie Johnson, dentist, Scottsdale, Arizona. Just give me a little
mentor.
Yeah, mentor. I need a little bit of history here. Our listeners need some history. Lay it on me.
Absolutely. History is pretty simple. As I said, came from some mechanical engineers. I have two wonderful parents, both bright. I lived in Michigan until 1999. Graduated at the University of Michigan in 1992. So when I graduated school and went out to be an associate, which I think is important for, I can go on and on about that side of it, but the mentorship more than anything else, having somebody by your side, helping you figure out what you're doing in dentistry, what you like, what you don't like, what they can help you with, hold your hand, show you the business side, learn from their mistakes. It's the cheapest way to learn. Let somebody else make the financial mistake. Right. Let somebody else make a practice mistake and you learn. And from that standpoint, I did that for 7 years. But as I was sharing at lunch with somebody that asked, General Motors went on strike in about 1996. And our practice revenues went from 100,000 to 26 or 27,000. That's the day I knew that General Motors owned me. And it was a real enlightening light bulb moment, the kind that makes you stop and think and really reevaluate, what are you going to do? Because I kind of knew that, but that was the moment that it just solidified and cement that I needed to leave. I needed to get out of Michigan, because if I didn't leave Michigan, if I bought a home, if I made mortgage payments, if I bought a practice, if I chose all those things, and it all depended on whether I was going to get $100 for an amalgam filling at that point, and they decided it was worth $25, my mortgage payment wasn't going down by 75%. So I knew that I had to get out of that situation. So at that point, I made plans. I had to go out and pass new boards, do the whole nine yards. I made a specific plan to leave Michigan.
You were as an associate still at this point.
I was an associate at that point. We had talked about buying in. We had done all those usual things at that point because it was about 3-4 years into it. So we were making plans to look ahead, but it just wasn't the right situation for me at that point. It became very clear. So at that point, as I made my decision personally where to go, I wasn't married, didn't have any kids. I was the epitome of freedom. I could do what I wanted. And so I chose, where am I going to go? And I chose Scottsdale, basically chose Phoenix. And lots of reasons. We could spend the rest of the podcast talking about
beautiful.
Why to be here.
It's
but
March.
Here we are sitting on the
it's
patio. We've got a beer in our hand and it's 80 odd degrees. And, it's just gorgeous.
I'm already thinking like, man, it's cold and rainy.
Everybody invites me to Florida to play golf with them again still. And that kind of thing. And I laugh. I go, why am I leaving? I'm in absolute
you come
heaven.
To me to play golf.
Yeah, exactly. You come here. I'm happy to put you up at the house. I got guest rooms. Let's go.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, then it became a plan. Okay. And, I think part of what we're going to talk about today is plan.
Yeah. Exactly.
I had a plan and that's who I am. If I make a plan and you work that plan, doesn't matter whether it's restoring a tooth or whether it's making an investment plan, whether it's making your life plan, have an idea. That doesn't mean it's set in stone. You know that, but if you know where you want to go, if you know what the end is going to be, you have a lot better chance of getting there by at least having a vision and a goal to get there. And I think a lot of people don't ever do that. I've heard in talking with people.
Well, I think the dream, you dream it up, but fewer people have kind of the motivation to jump on the dream, right? To carry it out. So when you moved to Scottsdale, did you just buy a practice outright, start a practice? What happened there?
I did purchase. I found a practice that had more amalgam than you could imagine, which was wonderful. You know, you look at the x-rays and all you can think is future crown, future crown, future crown. This is going to work. You know, I need to buy a Cerec. This is going to work. So bottom line was, came out, made a plan, bought a house out here, had it built, bought a practice and started working basically. Rental at that point, I was renting a space that the dentist was previously in. The practice at that point was 32 years old. So from very established practice, very, very run of the mill, no other word for it. Fee for service still, you know, type of thing. We really, you know, it wasn't anything too crazy, a little Delta, a little PPO, but nothing crazy. Well-established patients, love their previous dentist. He chose very wisely. He was looking for who he wanted to take over instead of just selling to anybody. And so I purchased the practice. A couple years later, I built my own building. So in 2003, I moved into a 3,000 square foot building on a bigger street. Kind of did a little bit more, if you will, more modern stuff, you know, kind of put it into perspective. And then been working in that same location, solo dentist, few hours a week, you know, a couple days a week. I'm not your prototypical. I'll be there 6 days, you know, 12 hours a day. I do it completely different than most.
So, okay. Last question before we really, because really what we want to talk about is the financial life.
But we still have a plan to worry about.
We're going to get there. But okay, last question, just because you're getting my mind running as far as, so have you thought, how come you haven't brought an associate or thought about running? Have you thought about bringing an associate?
I would say that over the last few years, I've thought about it. But the reality is that because of the competitive nature of dentistry in Phoenix, we have people drive by 200 dentists to get to me. But there's so much competition that I, as a fee-for-service person, I can only attract X number of patients. I live on 10 to 15 new patients in a month. My PPO brethren are out there, brothers and sisters, I should say, are out there doing 75, 100, a ton of new patients.
Well, not that many, but right.
But big numbers. And their practice, when I have 1,100 active patients, it's a completely different ball game for me. And as I said, you would never necessarily copy
what I'm doing,
but it's a whole different way to practice than what most people do on a day-to-day basis. But it's for me, it's the right fit. It's my plan. Sure. It's how I want to do it. But back to the associate question, absolutely. My transition plan is what I'm starting to put into place.
Right.
Where am I going to go? How am I going to transition from being where I am today to where am I going to be 2 years from now, 5 years from now? And that's the plan that's basically starting to get
swung in.
Well,
and that has a huge financial implication for, you know, a lot of reasons for what, we'll get into that, I'm sure. But
well, somebody's got to buy a building. You know, we're dealing with covering different hours. There's, you know, it's a gamut, and it's fun actually for me to listen to these podcasts, as you pointed out on Cerec Doctors, that they're out there, and I'm listening to the millennial side because I'm going to break them. I'm 49 years old, right?
Right.
I am not a millennial dentist. So only in my heart, but you know, in my head, but I'm really not, you know? And so I need to understand where the millennial dentist is coming from, because that is going to be more than likely 100%. The person who is coming in and going to take over my practice in some way, shape or form. I'm going to have to work with that person. And luckily, here at the Scottsdale Center, I work with millennials all day long.
I'll say it's pretty awesome because you're going to get, they say, the run of mill, the pick of the litter, if you will.
Yeah. And, you know, there have been people that have inquired, when am I selling? What am I going to do? So, I mean, I've already got some help in that regard. People have already gone that direction with me. I just have to make sure that I make the right choice for me and my family and for that next person to make sure that, again, I get choosy and find the right situation so that somebody can be set up for success for the rest of their life, too.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So let's
Sorry, that went way long.
No, that was good. That was good.
Okay.
We're 5-10 minutes in. Something like that. That was good.
We haven't lost all the listeners yet. We're good.
Okay. Everybody's like, okay, this old guy, man, he rambles on enough. Just kidding. Okay. So, but what I do want to, you're passionate about investments, financial management, something I obviously, you know,
you have a passion for too, obviously.
Yeah, in 5 episodes, you know, 2 of them have already been financially related, or 3 of them have.
The fact that somebody actually knows what an HSA is and wants to talk about it in a podcast is, you know, it's
I'm passionate about HSA, man. Gosh, they're great.
Yeah, I've had one forever.
That's beauty. So I do, I guess the direction I'd love to take this is because it's one thing for me to say something or for us to read something, but it's just to kind of hear your I guess a little bit of your financial journey that's kind of given you, you know, again, it's all about perspective and your ability to now see. And what I love as a millennial to do is basically extract information from better people and smart people than I am, right?
Like, amen.
You've got tons of experience that I'm stupid to try and reinvent the wheel. So I want our listeners to kind of hear that from you and basically get kind of understand why you're passionate about what you're passionate about.
Well, I'm passionate because to me, it's the next level of taking care of myself and my family and making sure that I'm going to be okay.
When did money and all that become something you started being interested in?
How about when I was 11 and a paper boy?
So early?
Yeah. To me, I had a brother that's a year and a half younger than I am that when he got his allowance, by Friday, it was gone. You know, it burned a hole in
wow.
his pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
And for me, I was the opposite. Every time I got money, I would find some way to save some of it or put it away and save and save and save and then be ready for whatever it was that I was actually trying to do. So I always had a plan for it.
Sure.
At 11, not that it was necessarily set in stone, I knew I wanted to be a dentist. So yeah, when I was early on, I was making money to go to school and putting away as much as I could. And I'm going to blow every one of your millennial people away. I think we talked about it a little bit earlier. I graduated in 1992 with $26,000 in debt.
Wow.
Okay.
Gosh.
And I felt
oh
my goodness. The only credit card payment I have not made in my entire life was after I paid for my Northeastern regional boards at $500 and some in May or April of 1992. I couldn't make the payment. It was the only time I had zero money in my bank account and had no way to make a payment. And I literally paid the minimum and floated that to go and went from there. I never had another balance, quote unquote, on my credit card that I've not paid off every month. So, you know, I planned and got through it, but I was 26 in debt. And today that's, you know.
Laser ingrained in your memory. Yeah.
Well, and one of those things, I paid it off obviously and moved on, but it's a different world today.
Your normal graduating student now, let's just say $250,000, you know, $100,000 in debt.
Oh, call it $250,000 just so that you can feel really good about that right. $1 million number in there. You know, you're a quarter million in debt.
What's your take on the next step?
I am certainly not an expert by any stretch. What I would say is my gut instinct is the same as most. Know what your interest payment, what your interest rate is, and compare it with what either you can make or what your other investment options are. And that's just basic investing 101, right? If somebody's going to pay you 10% or 5% for some fixed item, which are you going to choose? You're going to choose the 10%. Well, it's the same thing. If you're paying 4% or 6% or 3% on your loans, that makes a huge difference or an idea of where you need to go. Because if you can, in theory, make more or have a better opportunity, you just need to chunk along at the minimum and stretch it out as long as you can. To throw a mentor's name out, Rick Edelman is a financial advisor, and he's written many books, The New Rules of Money, that type of thing. That, again, I'm a reader. You know, I gathered my knowledge from the same way. And his thing was buy a home and never pay it off. I don't necessarily agree with it because I can understand the security of being 85 years, the insecurity, sorry, of being 85 years old and not having your home paid off. I think that could probably keep you up at night.
If you have $10 million in the bank.
That's right. If you have the money in the bank, it's a great thing. And that's, I think, where you have to start looking at it from early on. If you have debt and you've done it specifically for college, like we're talking about, for the profession, and you're looking at what you can actually earn with that degree, was it a good investment? And I would say that dental school, for the most part, is right on the borderline, but everybody manages at this point to get out of the debt. It's when we start seeing failures. Unfortunately, we're not going to see the failures for 10, 15, or 20 years down the road when all heck breaks loose, so to speak, on a group of dentists newly minted that are now 20 years down the road and are still struggling with their debt. But for the most part, yes, if you can manage to go get into a situation that is good for you, you're making enough income, you make wise choices in your life and lifestyle, now you have to say, okay, I'm just going to chunk along, not at the minimum necessarily, but certainly making your regular payments to get through that and just take it as this is the cost of getting in. We can get into a whole episode of the economics of whether it's a good decision or not. I will put it this way. If somebody goes to school and racks up $200,000 worth of debt and they come out with a history degree and they want to go be a teacher at $50,000 a year in a normal inner city school, It was not a wise decision. Dentistry, different beast. We have alternatives, and we probably are going to make more income based off of that. We have a chance. Last statistic I saw is $160K is the standard, the average, median, whatever you want to put it. I guess median would probably be the correct term of income for a dentist in America. So if you're making the median income at 160, that's a lot different than 300,000, and that's a lot different than somebody at 80, because I know a lot of people that are making 200, 300.
Sure.
So somebody's got to be on the other end of that curve.
Well, I always wonder about the statistics, because I'm like, who's making 150? What are you doing wrong? Like, come on. Like, they're all, I don't think they're listening to podcasts. Let's start.
That might be their problem. They need to listen to more podcasts.
Okay, so I want to dig deeper here. Let's keep moving. Let's just go ahead and say, for the sake of the conversation, that we've got our loans kind of figured out. We have that plan under control. We're starting to accumulate more money. So we move forward from that.
We have spare money.
Yes, right? Thank you.
We have discretionary cash. Yeah. And you know, with our family doesn't want to spend it before we do something else with it, right? We want to go to Disney World. We want to do this. We got to live life, right?
I think it becomes even sooner than probably discretionary because, you know,
no,
especially
you're absolutely
millennial,
right.
Because we're bad about just, you know,
you should be having a plan.
Yeah.
Right. You need a plan. You need to say, I'm going to save $1,000 a month. Something, whatever that is, a 500, 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, pick a number. But once you've picked that number, it's no different than any other budget item in your life. Because I firmly believe in budgets. If you know your income is going to be $160,000, you have to say, what am I going to pay in income tax? What am I going to pay for this? What's the kid's private school? What am I going to pay for a car each year? What am I going to do for this? What's the vacation to Disneyland going to cost me? You have to have that all budgeted out so that at the end you go, I'm going to make $160,000 and I'm going to spend $185,000. Oops, now I got to deal with that. Or I'm going to make $160,000 and I'm going to spend $140,000. I've got $20,000. That doesn't mean you blow $20,000 at the craps table. It means I'm going to take $10,000 and do this, and I'm going to take $10,000 and do that, and you're going to make choices with that extra money, whatever those choices may be. And so that's the key to budgeting.
And I'm a big believer, and because of that, that you have to pay yourself first. You know,
well, that's just it. That's a budget item, right? The people my age that are out there practicing that basically are not taking a regular paycheck, are taking whatever's left over. That scares me. That is absolutely crazy to me, because you've created, pick a number,
so
right?
Common, right?
$60,000, $80,000, $100,000, $150,000 in revenue per month. And at the end, what trickled down at the end of the funnel is $2.14. Really? And that's what I'm going to pay myself? That doesn't make sense to me. So again, you've set yourself up to have, this is my income, this is what I'm going to do, and you work backwards. A whole nother podcast would be, let's talk what comes out the bottom of that funnel and then figure out how to get back up to the top of the funnel. What needs to pour into that funnel so that I get what I want out of the bottom of it? If I want 150, then I need to get X, 300,000, 450. Something has to come in the top to produce that. And we just need to figure it out. And everything goes into that calculation. What's the cost for rent? What am I going to pay my student loans with? Et cetera, so that I get X at the bottom.
Well, and my kind of thought process is that, like, psychologically, we're so bad about wanting to, at the end of the day, if it comes down to, and this is one of the reasons why I say I don't like people who pay their loans off early necessarily, because at the end of the month, if you've got, you know, you got a $500 payment on something and you've got $500 left, you're not going to go spend that $500 on movie and dinner and the whole thing. You're going to make the payment, right? Because you know you have to make the payment. If it comes back to the end of the month and you got $500, it's between putting that in towards your Roth IRA or your going to dinner. A lot of people are going to choose dinner.
Right. That's why it has to be in your plan that this is going to be done. So you're absolutely right. Back to the topic of
how did this work for you as far as, like, what was your plan? I guess, I mean,
part of it comes down to what we just talked about with the funnel. Right. Part of my plan was, what is the maximum amount I can put away into my retirement fund? And there's a number. It's statutory. It's not like I can dream. Right. My number is 54,000 plus at this point, 6,000 more as a 50 year old for that. I finally get my catch up. It's great. It's extra $6,000 I can put away. And I'm going cha-ching. You know, it's a big milestone birthday, right? Everybody's like, oh, you're going to turn 50. I'm like, yes,
yeah,
I can put 6,000 more away. You know, I waited 50 years to do this. Let's go.
Olds, that's,
you know,
the last thing they're thinking about.
You know, let's do it. And so if statutory, I can put 54,000. Now the question comes down to, quite simply, can my income of my practice support that dream? Can I put 54,000, aka 60,000? Can I put 54,000 away? If I can, and that's what I want to do, then I have to make the arrangements with a 401k, with my provider, and do that. And then I've put the money away. Maybe my practice doesn't support that. If my practice supports putting away 16,000, then you have other alternatives available that you are less expensive, easier to administer, easier to deal with, not as much headache, paperwork, et cetera, which is awesome. But it's putting something, finding a number that your practice will budget out to and make it happen. So if it's a smaller number, relatively speaking, 12,000, 16,000, you've got SEP IRAs, you've got all kinds of different little things like that that you can put together and say, I'm going to put this away for retirement and just sock it away. And you already hit the nail on the head, Sully. You've got to put it away in a retirement plan versus putting it away in some kind of investment vehicle outside of a retirement. Yeah, some kind of taxable plan is worse than putting it away in retirement. Multiple reasons, but I'm going to tell you right now, if it's sitting in a brokerage account, it's accessible. So when things go haywire and you don't have an emergency fund set aside, or you do, you're going to go raid that brokerage account versus going into your retirement plan. There's a penalty for doing it. It's 10%. You're going to leave that money alone and you're going to just let it accumulate. And as a young person, that tax advantage is gigantic to getting growth. There's a simple study out on the internet and you just have to look for it. It's talking about compounding over time. You take a 25-year-old, I think is the number, and you put in $2,000 a year into just a simple IRA for 6 years, and you do the math on compounding, and you take that same 26-year-old at that point that didn't put anything in and do $2,000. I'm sure you've seen it. And you get to the end. The person who put in money from 25 to 30 or 20 to 25 or whatever that is has more money at the end than the person who started at the end of that 5 years. So number one thing I told my brother, who's 15 years younger, when he got his job, I said, your money goes into your 403B in his case, but it goes into your retirement plan. No questions asked. Get it over with. And he's done it. So he's going to be well to do at the end because he did that. And so I suggest to the millennials, as soon as you can get that and you know what your budget number is, start putting the money away.
Two awesome things. You probably know about them, but mint.com is obviously
absolutely
is a great one. I actually love personalcapital.com. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
But I have not heard of that.
I like it a little more. Mint's probably been a little better at budgeting, but Personal Capital can incorporate all your investments and all your stuff. So I like Personal Capital a little more from just kind of a global view.
Sure. And that's better. Anytime you can look at the whole picture versus looking at a little tiny picture window, by all means.
Well, and it kind of gives you your net worth. So it kind of shows you, okay, is the trajectory up or is the trajectory down? Is the trajectory, you know, it's kind of good to see. It's okay, well, yeah, we're making more money, but if our trajectory's even or down, it's like we're not doing things necessarily that are,
you know, us old guys, we just use an Excel spreadsheet for those kind of things. So I'm not a millennial by far. No, I don't pump that into an online, gosh. You know, yeah. I get out my slide rule and I figure out where I'm at. Yeah.
Golly, that's classic. Yeah. Okay. So in our discussions earlier, day trading.
Yeah. Day trading. Do you really want to go down that road?
What I want to go down is I want to go, okay. So this, I'm like, man, Ernie, we totally align here. We're on budgeting, saving first, all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we start to, let's talk about investments.
Sure.
Let's get there.
So I'm going to put a simple line in the sand for you. Okay. To every millennial out there listening to the podcast, if you have under $100,000 in investable income, there's really only one way for you to deal with it. And that is to put it into a low cost mutual fund. And whether it's in a retirement account or whether it's in a brokerage account that's taxable, it doesn't really matter. You're not gaining much advantage to trying to diversify into a bunch of other things, but without using a mutual fund.
So this is total investable.
Total investable. And in either account, however you want to look at it. And here's why I say that. Just in simple terms, in order for you to invest $100,000 in a brokerage account wisely, you're going to have to put $20,000 in five different stocks. Or five different investments, right? And that's just barely enough to get away with doing it in a way that's going to pay dollars and cents to you. You're going to pay too much in commissions. You're going to pay too much in other things in the process. The bottom line is, as you know, from using low-cost mutual funds, you can find very low-cost ways to invest any amount of money, $500, $1,000, $2,500. You can find low numbers that way that you don't pay a ton to actually own the market. And the bottom line with my passion is getting people to own the market when it's time to own the market and time to get out of the market by timing the market. But that's a whole nother situation. But the bottom line is use the low cost that you can find. If you've got a low cost index fund that you're only paying, 0.2% on, you're going to chew that up in commissions in no time, just trying to diversify your own investments when the low cost mutual fund of owning the entire stock market is going to do it. The only exception I'll give you is when you've got 50 grand, we'll say, and you're going to buy the ETF known as SPY. Okay, SPY is basically a tracking mutual fund of the entire S&P 500, the 500 largest companies in the United States. So you buy SPY, that's roughly at $237 a share at the moment when we're recording this, you're going to get a certain number of shares for that investment. That's a whole different beast because you just bought the whole market. The expense ratio of SPY is 0.09%. Compared to a low-cost mutual fund, I don't know of a mutual fund that has that low of an expense ratio. The problem is you're paying online fees of $4.95, $7.95, whatever for the transaction. So as you put in $1,000 a month, adding the $1,000 of SPY at $7.95, it starts to make that number up. You'd have to actually look at the math, but why would you basically dollar cost average in each month into SPY and pay a commission every time in than to go and say, here's my $1,000, low cost mutual fund, chew it up. They charge me nothing to do it because it's a no load fund. And then you pay 0.2%. So do the math. What's behind that? And it's just a simple math problem. Do you want to own SPY and own the entire market? Or do you want a low cost mutual fund that you can chunk in money at no price to get into every month? If you've made a budget and you've decided $1,000 is going in, $1,000 goes in and you don't pay anything to do it month after month after month.
So all your retirement funds, are you recommending those be?
Retirement funds are different, but what I'll say is if you're in control, and that's rare for a millennial because you probably don't own your practice, but if you do, you have the opportunity, obviously, to set up your retirement plan however you want to set it up, right? So you have control, but assuming you're not in control, right? Whoever it may be, a family member that owns the practice or a mentor of yours that you're working for, they've got their mutual fund already set up. Chances are they have American funds, American Century funds, they've got Vanguard funds, whatever it may be that is your menu to choose from. It's a Chinese menu. You got 20 to choose from. Find the one with the lowest, find one that actually makes money, okay?
Yeah,
that's a performance issue, and we can talk all day long about performance. Right. But I'll tell you that most mutual funds either underperform or barely perform at the same level as the U.S. stock market, assuming that's what you're trying to work into, right? We're just going to make that assumption. You're not diversifying out into small caps. You're not diversifying into European funds or internationals. I'm just talking about the actual fund that's supposed to be large cap of the United States, right?
Yeah. So like Vanguard large cap.
The Vanguard large cap. It should mimic the SPY, should mimic the S&P 500 or the Dow, should mimic, what's the other one? Schwab has one, I believe, as well. That's the total market, that kind of thing. You're talking about something that should be mimicking the market. And you're going to pay a fee for it, whatever that may be. You shouldn't pay a fee, a load every time in, but you should be paying an expense ratio. So what you're trying to do, if you have an active fund, American funds, American, you know, et cetera, do they meet what they should be? Last year, the S&P 500 made 11%. If that fund didn't make 11%, why did you pay them?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, exactly.
You paid them and you didn't get anything for your money. You literally didn't get anything. So why did you pay them? That's my whole thing about active management. If you're going to pay active management, get active management results. Did they make 12%, 13%, 15%, 20% for 2016? Then you're worth paying for the active manager. They're making good decisions.
So my thing with that is like the likelihood that I pick the right active manager that can beat that, I'm not confident in my ability to pick that person.
Amen.
So I'm better than putting in the mutual fund.
Exactly. If you simply received roughly loosely what the American stock market did year in and year out, wouldn't you be happy?
Exactly.
There's no risk to did so and so beat the market or lose to the market in any given year. You don't care. What did the market do? And did I duplicate those results? If you duplicate those results with minimal fees, you're ahead of the game. You didn't have any risk.
The reality is if you're under 35, you have time on your side.
Absolutely.
So really all you need is to do that.
Correct.
That's part of my big argument is why get fancy?
Right. There is no, that's my point. So if you're in a 401k or any kind of retirement fund, let me be generic, any kind of retirement fund that you're not in control of, your job is to find the lowest expenses that exist within those 20 or 10 mutual funds you can choose from that has managed to keep up with the market. If every one of them is underperforming, your job is actually to go to your boss and say, can we talk about this? This isn't working. Have you looked at performance and why? And he's their best friend. They play golf together, right?
Or that's your dad.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Then you have to have a better talk with your dad about this, but you need to, But if something's out there outperforming the market, on a consistent basis, invest in it. Even if it costs a little bit more than the lowest cost, at least it's giving you return. So you have to do some analysis. You can't just go in blind or put 10% in all 10. That doesn't make any sense either. Find what's the right investment. Now, on the other side of it, yes, if you're in control, if you can pick what kind is out there, you need to set up something and be very specific with the person. There's going to be somebody helping you do this. This is not something you do on your own anyway. There's going to be a financial advisor involved that's a fiduciary to the plan. Talk to them frankly and say, look, I want a low-cost index option that I can go and invest in the least amount that way. I'm happy to put other funds in that we think are good and you think are good and everything else, because I get 10 options or 20 options no matter what. You're not just going to put one in there. But if you can find one that's going to deliver those kind of things, then that's what you're trying to do. And you're in control of that, so do it. And if you need info, you know, I hate to say ask Sully, but, you know, I'm sure at some point we'll give out my information.
Yeah, exactly,
and next thing you know, my email is going to blow
you
up.
Blow with a bunch of 20, 30-year-olds.
Yeah. What the? And I'll be happy to help
my money.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we're going to start the Sarac Doctors hedge fund here soon,
right, exactly.
And then I'll be all set.
You know, it's not a terrible idea.
I've thought about it, actually. It's a long story on that one, but I've thought about it.
I believe that. Some cocktails have been talked about that for sure.
Next thing you know, some guy writes me a check for $1 million and I have to go pass my tests.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
I'm a Series 6 guy now. I got it covered.
I don't think it'd be that crazy to come up with.
No, it wouldn't be. So that's the key, though, is coming up with a low-cost plan that basically matches out. And once you do that, it's all just keeping the money in, right? Doing dollar-cost averaging time and time again, every month. And ideally, do it multiple times a month. Depending on your paycheck, if you're going to put $1,000 a month because that's what's in your budget, actually do it two times, $501. There was a book called Unconventional Wisdom, and the author escapes me, but that's what I read 10, 15 years ago that basically said passive investing, active managers were not out beating the market. And so I needed to move to more of a passive.
You're the man.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I needed to move to a more passive investment strategy from that standpoint. You know, as somebody my age, I've lived through the 2001 bust. I've lived through the 2008 bust. And that's kind of what motivated me to say there has to be a way to time the market better, because the common wisdom and the pablum thrown at you over and over and over again is you can't time the market. You can't time the market. Day traders time the market every day down. I don't say to the minute, but you get my point. They call the top, they call the bottom. Why can't you do that on a longer time scale? And so I went out looking for that and saying,
but do they do that on a routine basis?
I would tell you that yes, that actually happens. And there's reasons for it. And not every day is amenable to that. There's a lot that goes into that. But the fact is that you can look at what's happening in the market and see that the market's about to turn on a day basis, on an intraday basis. So, but you look at over time, it's not that hard to take a very long-term view and pull up a chart and see that we've kind of done this thing from, as I've done my back testing, back to the 90s. And we've had this big rise into 2001. We had a massive fall, if you will, down to 2003, 2004. We had this massive rise back up to 2008. We all know at 2008, we went way down again. And then we turned right around in 2009 and we've never looked back. And so if you just look at that, if you caught the trend up in 91 to 2001, and you missed the down, and you caught the trend up, and you missed the down, and you caught the trend up.
You're killing it.
You're doing pretty good, right?
You're retired.
you didn't lose just in the hypothetical, right?
30% or something.
Yeah. A million goes to, you know, 2 million, 2 million goes to a million goes to two, a two goes to one, and one goes back to two or three. You know, so you've made these numbers in that amount of time from 91 until now. It's a career, an investing career. And you made, as I did the math, 500 and some percent. I want to say it's 560. Don't quote me. It's on my website. But 560, if you actually missed those and did it aggressively by being very Chicken Little-ish, every time things kind of got a little squirrely, you got out, you were dumping out, you made 760%. give or take. Again, I don't have the numbers dead in front
of me.
So you save 200% of your money by doing that. And then if you did it smartly,
and on $1 million, that
can be very impressive, can it?
Yeah.
And if you turn around and say, okay, I did it more smartly, I had better rules in place, which are what traders use, I actually made 1,000%. So you doubled your money basically. So if you did start with $1 million at the beginning and you had 500% or 5 million, how about $1 million to 10 million by missing and getting better sleep in 2001, 2 and 3, and getting better sleep. And I'm not saying you could have done it because retirement funds don't let you do it. But if you could have been more aggressive and actually made money on the way down, which is called shorting, but it's not allowed in retirement funds, but you could have found ways to do it outside of that, you could have made money on the way down because of basically reversing the rules, for lack of a better way to say it.
Could you do that with basically a pension plan or something that where you could define a benefit plan where you could...
Yeah,
you could short in $250,000 almost.
Yeah, if you pulled in there are certain type of retirement funds that you can do individual stocks or brokerage type accounts. They're a lot more specialty. You pay a little bit more for it, etc. But are there ways to actually buy SPY and buy its counter, which is SH, short? And you have other versions of it that are double and triples. And I have a lot of my subscribers ask those questions. Can I do that? Yeah, you can. I think it's pretty aggressive. You know, you better have a pretty good idea. I have some professional type investors that are subscribers to mine and they want to go that way. But I'm trying to keep it to the everyday dentist, the everyday person. Just, hey, am I supposed to be in the market or not in the market? And you know, you're supposed to be in the market right now.
I guess my last question that kind of ties this all in a little bit is, where is Ernie Johnson today in the market? I mean, I feel like we are all living the good life right now. Things are up. Yep. Stock market's up.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know in Nashville, there's 20-something cranes. Life is good. What are you doing?
Me personally, that's a loaded question. Okay. So number one is, I'm going to put in the shameless plug now just to get it in there, right? DentistMarketAlert.com.
I love it.
Okay.
I'm going to be a subscriber.
That's where people need to go.
DentistMarketAlert.com.
DentistMarketAlert.com. That's retirement timing. That's the long term. Okay. That's the one that's going to change Sully's life, because what he's going to do is he's going to miss 2001 and 2008. That's going to tell him when the conditions are right. We're sitting under a beautiful blue sky, right? 80 some degrees. If you got rained on right now, you'd be stunned. Would you not?
Oh, yeah.
It couldn't happen. Right. So, but if there's clouds overhead and you can see, you know, temperature's starting to change a little bit, getting a little cooler. Now you might think that maybe some rain's coming. That's what Dentist Market Alert is doing. It basically says, we don't have clouds in the sky right now. There is no clouds on the horizon. And so we're still in a buy mode. And that just means you need to keep dollar cost averaging, putting money into the accounts, staying, for the professional term is long, staying in the market, okay? So you wanna stay in at this point. There's no clouds that are gathering at this point. Are there things that are scary in the market? Absolutely. Every day there's something scary that comes along. North Korea decides to launch a missile. We're coming up against a debt ceiling. I can go on and on about what the worries are, but the worries don't matter until they actually start to change how the market's reacting to them. I can also tell you that the price of the market right now, relative to some very specific things, CAPE is one of them, is basically, I don't want to say off the charts, but it's also at the same levels that it was in 1929, in 2007 and 2001. That scares me as an investor that pays attention to those things. 99.999, I don't know how far you want to go to the decimals, but of the 330 million or 350 million people, there might be 35 million people in this country that actually know what that means without having to go to the internet and look it up. And so when you look at that, that's 35 million people that have kind of one foot on the brake right now in the market, kind of going, okay, you know, I'm willing to ride it, but I'm scared. There's definitely some clouds starting to form, but the price hasn't shown those clouds. And until the price starts showing clouds, you really can't just panic out and say, I can't do anything. So that's part of it. So when you see those kind of things that are very specific, that's there. My system relies on price. Until the market starts changing, there's no reason to change your investment strategies, and it will. And basically a couple months from now, and that seems like a long time, except for you already pointed out, you got 30 years. 2 months isn't really going to make a difference, relatively speaking. But in 2 months, there may be a sell signal. And when that sell signal shows up because price has changed, that's going to tell you, okay, I need to back off. I need to pull some money out. timing-wise, I'm going to tell you to get in all in or all out, but that's just what the timing is. You can choose whether you're going to take out 20%, 50%. How are you going to deal with it to kind of lessen your exposure?
And when, and so just the stupid question out there for
sure,
not only myself and everybody else is, okay, so when you say be weary, get out, you're talking about basically moving retirement funds, taxable income funds, wherever
anything,
they are,
anything
into
in,
just
anything
money
invested.
Market. Yeah. Funds, yep. Basically, just the nothings.
Yep. Anything, yeah. Anything invested in the U.S. stock market at that point needs to be guarded, and you can choose how to guard it. There's rules for not getting out, but there's rules for saying, okay, I need to pull away, and there's rules for saying, okay, I need to be very much cautious and make some choices. The 1,000% that pulls that we made over that time frame basically has more risk associated with it. There's no free lunch. Right. If you buy and hold, it's 560% or whatever. And if you followed it strictly, whenever the cloud started to accumulate, you sold out. There were times you sold out at, I don't want to say the bottom of that particular trough, but you
might have missed some little.
You might have missed something, right? But you still managed to make an extra 200%. So even in the most conservative manner with this system, you made more money than just the buy and holders. Period. But if you actually were a little bit more aggressive, shall we say, then you made more, but there's risk.
Well, and again, it goes back to the kind of the theme of the conversation is have a plan, know the plan, yep. Stick with the plan.
And that's just it. If you follow this plan and realize that that's what the risk is and what the whole way that it gets played, you just go ahead and play it because you know what the plan is. Some people are willing to ride through it. My brother is one of them, that got invested early. He looks at it because he's a millennial. He looks at it the same way. Guess what? I have so much time, I don't care. I'm just going to keep chunking the money in each month. And he doesn't worry about where it is at any given time. And that's wonderful for him. For those of us that are older, if we took another 50% crush on our retirement money, that's going to change a
delaying
lot of
your retirement.
It's going to 6 years.
Yeah.
5 or 6 years. Or, maybe there are some who won't retire.
Sure.
Because
right? I think it's what 08 did to a lot of people.
Exactly. And so that's what you want to try.
A lot of new dentists were trying to find jobs.
There are too many dentists in the marketplace because we didn't make any money in the market.
Exactly right.
So basically, there's three ways that my timing system works. You either have a buy signal, which we've been on a majority of the time. I don't want to make it out that everything is getting out of the market. There have literally been 11 signals to sell in the last, what would that be, 91 to 2017.
And they're probably very short-lived, I would be in the matter. I mean,
well, not
longest?
2001. 2001 was the longest living sell. It just honestly just kept going down, right? And it never turned until 2003 and 2004. And so that's when, for that 3 years, you were basically out of the market, according to this particular system. So that was the good news. You got to sleep at night, you weren't invested, and you were actually, once it changed, that was your opportunity to re-up at the lows and start accumulating again. And then it told you to get out in, I'd have to look at my website because I don't keep them in my head, but it was basically that January
of 2000.
Hopefully
the listeners are probably already up on it.
I hope they're on it already so they can go look, but it's listed there under the system. It says the specific sell dates. So you can check me, as to what's there. And then, as I said, there's a buy, there's an on alert, and there's a sell signal. So the on alert is basically my way of telling dentists, you need to pay attention. Okay. You've been on a buy and you've just been putting the money in and putting the money in and putting the money in and you know what? Wakeboarding, enjoying your sailboat, going to the golf course, spending money like mad. You don't care, right? And I don't want you to care. That's my job. That's why you employ me is I'm going to give you the heads up. And that's all it is a heads up. This may mean nothing, but the clouds are starting to form and you may want to pay attention to this. And then finally, when the rain starts, that's when the sell signal hits. And I say, hey, it's raining. This is your opportunity. If you want to sell, now's the time to sell. If you want to be a little bit more risky about it or take out just a chunk here or a chunk there and come up with your plan, be my guest. And I'll help you, to figure out what's the right thing to do. But that's all we do. We give you a buy, an on alert, or a sell signal. And then when it's time to buy again, you get a buy signal. And you'll get an email every month.
It's very simple.
It's very simple. It's not designed to make it complicated. It's not day trading. That's why when you brought it up, I'm like, oh, we can go down that road, but we ain't ever. We need more beer and we're going to definitely need some more time.
More time.
Yeah. But the simple is retirement planning. And for young people specifically, I want you to avoid 2001 and 2008. And that's exactly what it's designed to do. And just make it super simple.
Well, if you do that and you do it as long as we can do it, then you're creating substantial generational wealth.
Absolutely.
It's a totally different ballgame.
Because to break away from the dentist market alert thing, what I really want to say is I'm ashamed at what the financial financial advisors as a group are doing. And it just ticked me off. It really did. They're all worried about assets under management, or what they call AUM. They just want to accumulate as much money as possible and take the skim, whether they get 0.5%, 1%, 0.25%, it doesn't matter. When you've got 100 million under assets under management, that's some serious coin. That's why they're driving Porsches and they're basically living the dream. And it doesn't matter whether the market goes up or down. They don't care. They're just taking the skim. Give me 1% of 100 million year after year after year, which is why the CEREC Doctors Hedge Fund has got to come into play.
You.
So that I don't have to do this anymore.
No.
You know, and I don't want to turn the burr. I just want to take my 1%.
Yeah,
you know,
gosh.
It's great. So, you know, that's the dream of the financial advisor world. Just take the 1% over and over and over again.
Oh, a financial advisor for dentists is one of the best. That's what I'm going into if I can't practice dentistry.
Absolutely.
Anymore.
They've got money, right? They don't know what they're doing. They don't check your performance. They don't do all the things that need to be done. And because they don't do that, it's very easy for financial advisors to take dentists for a ride. And I just want you to have the opportunity to not get taken for a ride. You know, I don't care whether you follow the buy and the on alert or sell signals. That's completely up to you. I'm happy to give you the research behind it, the ideas behind it, and why it makes sense. But it's up to you to say, hold your financial advisor accountable. I'm not trying to replace them. I'm just trying to give you a tool to be able to walk into their office and say, so what do you think of the market? And they go, oh, well, you know, great time to buy. It's down. Yeah, but it's down in a way that it was in 2001 and 2008. Not at the bottom, I'm saying at the very top. It's starting to roll over a little bit. Isn't it time to kind of be a little, pull in the horns a little bit, be a little cautious? No. You need to stay fully invested. You know, we're in this for the long haul. You know, what are you really in for the long haul? You're not. You're in it to make
sure.
Money.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate reason to invest.
I love it.
Good.
Dude, we need to do this again. This
absolutely.
Has been fun.
Absolutely.
I got tons of
like
questions.
A monthly thing and, you know.
I know. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so contact info. So as far as dentistmarketalerts.com goes, is there a cost involved?
Dentist Market Alert. Sorry. No S. That's okay.
Just, yep. Let's clarify. Yep. We'll put it on the
Dentist
on the description.
DentistMarketAlert.com.
Is there a subscription cost?
Yes.
Or what's that cost?
It's $199 a year.
Okay. That's
okay.
Not bad at all.
No, that's just it. It's not meant to be this onerous thing
to
you.
It runs the show.
It allows me to keep my website up. There's no ads on it. You know, or anything else. There's a paywall there because I'm going to be extremely honest with you. The last thing I want is for this to get into the open world. People who have heard of dogs of the Dow and that kind of thing, it doesn't work anymore, right? Everybody says, oh, this system works. The systems don't work because they get out and everybody starts following them, right? The January effect, if you're familiar with it, same thing. It doesn't work anymore. Why? Everybody's starting to buy those stocks in December and early December and et cetera. It doesn't work. So once it gets out into the wild, it's gone. To me, I want to keep it behind a paywall and for lack of a better word, give it to my dentist friends, number one, and let them run with it. Because in my lifetime, in your lifetime, that's going to be all the people I really care about. I don't care about Joe Schmo on the street that is not a dentist, that doesn't have the investable assets and hasn't been taken advantage of. If I get 1,000 dentists to subscribe, I'm going to be the happiest man in the world, because that's going to be 1,000 people that aren't going to get taken advantage of. Yeah. But it keeps the lights on. Okay,
100%.
And that's the entire idea. The easiest way to contact me about this particular topic is info@dentistmarketalert.com.
Sure.
Come straight to my cell phone. Honestly, I'm a one-man band. You know, it's very simple for me to do because I know what the system is and I've put it in place.
Right.
And I don't want to say I'll answer every question because that's not necessarily true. And I'm not here to be your financial advisor. I'm just here to give you a tool to, as I said, have that frank conversation with your financial advisor. Because right now, you're right. Everybody's loving life, right? They've got fully invested. They are going to town. They're making money.
It's kind of like real estate, right? You know, it's like, who doesn't want to be a real estate agent? Gosh.
And that's also when there's extreme optimism in the market is the time to be a little cautious, especially when the CAPE, I want everybody to go look at it.
I'm going
to
Google it.
You know, go find out what that KPE actually means. And it's basically just one of those things. When it gets this high, there's risk. Doesn't mean it can't go higher. Doesn't mean you can't make more money. It just means you might want to think about what the ramifications are at this level from there. You never know. It could go to 1 million from here. I don't know. I really don't know. And I don't pretend to know. I just know that when the rain clouds start gathering, I'm going to tell you. And when it starts raining, I'm going to tell you. And then it's up to you to make some decisions about what to do.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.